Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk podcast. We are coming to you live. Not really, because it's on delay. But whatever, it's Sunday. We are undefeated. 6-0 Jayhawks. I am Kevin, joined with me, as always, my podcast partner and dear friend, Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great, Kevin, especially after this vengeful TCU victory we had this weekend. You know, it's episode 45 of the podcast. That's quite significant in KU history.
45?
45 was the number of Rafe LaFrenz, who, you know, he had career averages of, you know, nearly 16 points and almost... Well, 9.1 rebounds. We'll round it up to 10.
That sounds
good. To average 16 to 10 through a whole four-year career, it's pretty amazing. Cole Aldrich, also number 45. Mm-hmm. And Tom Cavisto, the guy that they named the football field after, also 45. So this is a significant podcast in KU lore.
We'll try to live up to those guys. Probably not going to, just to giving you guys a heads up on that front. What are we going to talk about today, Andrew? We got a lot of things. We got a recap of TCU, which was kind of a fun game, at least that first half. We'll have some more fun with technical fouls because we can't get enough of them. We'll preview Iowa State. Andrew, I want to ask you, do you think, is it possible that KU runs the table in the Big 12? We're going to talk about it later. Don't answer, but start thinking about it.
Okay.
I know that what your answer is going to be because you predicted it. So if you're right, man, that'd be crazy. And then, of course, we're also going to be joined, pretty exciting, by ESPN basketball insider Jeff Goodman on the podcast. He has been a little bit outspoken about Andrew Wiggins, and so that will be a lot of fun to have him on and get his take on the 2013-14 Jayhawks. And, of course, we also want to mention our sponsor, Johnny's Tavern. We appreciate them sponsoring the podcast. As always, we will have a gift card giveaway at the end of the podcast, so listen in for that and respond on Twitter, and you might win. So let's get right into this thing, Andrew. What do you say?
Let's do it.
So I think the storylines from this game, I guess, is maybe the first half closing the door early on a team that was maybe upset-minded. They had a record crowd. But maybe the bigger story bearing the lead here is Andrew Wiggins looking like a number one player in college basketball. What about you?
I think that's right. I think that the pro scouts watching yesterday saw what they needed to see. Scored 27 points. You know, most he's scored in his young and almost over college basketball career. But, you know, he was pretty aggressive. He scored from all spots on the floor, not just near the basket. He was making jumpers, making three-pointers. He definitely looked like the best player on the floor last night. And maybe not even that. Maybe even beyond that. Maybe it's... he looked like the player that we are expected to see.
Agreed. And, you know, to be fair, it was TCU. I mean, that's they're not very good. But he could have got 35 or 40 in this game if they wanted to. You know what I mean? It just felt like one of those games where he stepped on the court and said, I'm the best basketball player on this court, and I'm going to show it. And that's the kind of thing, you know, you hear Bill Self say, he leaves you wanting more. This game, you know, it was finally, I don't know, it just seemed to me like it was a realization of what he really could be game in and game out. And so I'm really hoping that this is kind of a stepping stone for him, because if we're going to go to the Final Four and if we're going to have a chance to win, you know, a lot of big games in this year, we're going to need him to play awesome. And he played awesome. So
no offense to TCU, but I mean, this is the first chance we've had to play a bad team in a long time.
Long time.
You know, the first first few games of the season, played some bad teams. But I mean, that's early on in someone's career when they're, especially as a freshman, figuring out everything. Everybody's learning how to play together. We didn't even run much offense, you know, set offenses in those games. So I mean, it's good to play a team like this. You know, normally you'd see a handful of these in November, December. To kind of get your confidence up, for lack of a better description. So, you know, it's good to have this one. You know, if you can do it against this one, then you build it up against bigger competition, get gain a little confidence. So I think that this was an important game for someone like Wiggins, and now he can take a step up. And not that he played poorly against, you know, Iowa State, who's our next opponent, you know, previously, but, you know, he's just building confidence, and eventually he'll get to a spot, I think, where, you know, he'll realize that he is better than everyone else.
That's what we need. Another storyline to me was the subs getting some good playing time for the first time in a while. Like you said, it's first time we've played a team where maybe we could get the end of the bench a little more action. Even we saw Andrew White for the first time in a long time. Any thoughts on Andrew White getting into the game? We, you know, talked about maybe he was not in the rotation. Is he hurt? Now we kind of know he's healthy at least.
He's healthy at least. The minutes he played, I think it was 4 minutes, were not very memorable at all. I think he had one rebound and one shot attempt, maybe a foul. So I mean, he got into the stat book, but other than that, the most memorable thing was that he existed in a game, nothing more than that. And he played at the end of the game. I think that when he got hurt, you know, in December, guys like Frank Camp and definitely Brandon Green jumped him significantly. So if there's going to be minutes to be given out to someone who's not in the top eight rotation, they weren't going to go to Andrew White. They were going to go to one of those two guys. And you saw that with Frank Camp getting some minutes yesterday, and definitely with Brandon Green getting some minutes yesterday, kind of getting squeezed out a little bit. But it's good to see that he's at least healthy enough to play. You know, there may come a time later in the season where we're going to need someone like Andrew White. If we need a spark off the bench, you know, at least making shots from the perimeter. You know, maybe we need him. So it's good to see that he's, you know, at least able to function.
I don't think we're going to see him. That's my prediction. I think he's been jumped by two players. I'm not sure he'll be here next year. Just my thoughts. We'll see. I hope he's here because I like the guy. And I think he's probably pretty good and has put in all the work. And you hear, you know, all the stories about how much he worked and everything. But I think Brandon Green has more upside. And I think Connor Francamp brings some intangibles as far as, you know, running the point and stuff that he can't do. So I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. I'm not sure what to think of it, but Barley, my dog, is making an appearance on the podcast. Sorry about that. Well, let's talk about some stats from this game. Andrew Wiggins, obviously 27, 8 for 13, 9 of 10 from the free throw line was nice. 5 rebounds and 5 assists. Who else jumped out to you from this game?
You know, Embiid had one of those games where he only plays about, you know, half the minutes. He played less than half the game. He had 19 minutes because he fouled out. You know, and had some sporadic minutes in the first half because of fouls and because of other reasons. But he had 14 points, six rebounds, and, you know, a couple quality blocks that kind of changed the game and made them think twice about going inside. So he affected the game. And, you know, our other freshman, Wayne Selden, 5 for 9 for 12 points, 4 assists, no turnovers. That's looking good for Selden as well. So, you know, the big three freshmen, along with Frank Mason getting some minutes too. It was, you know, good game for the freshman. Good confidence builder.
Agreed. Let's get into the player of the game, although I don't think it's going to be a very close race here.
Here's the three. I'm telling you, he's in a zone right now.
I think you could put a blindfold on him.
I've got him on their feet here, Lawrence.
All right, so your player of the game is who, Andrew?
Andrew W.
The white version or the...
No, Wiggins version.
Oh, okay. I'm going to give it to... Nope, got to give it to Wiggins. He was awesome. Look, that was a quick segment. Do we want to talk about anything else in this segment?
Okay, if it wasn't Wiggins, let's take Wiggins
the
out
non-Wiggins
of
the equation. Edition.
Who's number two? Who's the second best player of this game?
Probably Wayne Selden for me. You know, Embiid had the better stat line or whatever, and 14 points, 6 rebounds, 19 minutes. But he's got to control the fouls. I mean, in this game, it didn't matter, obviously. But in another game, we're going to need him, especially if Tariq Black's going to be out a little while. We'll see there. So, yeah, that was the one thing I didn't like to see from Embiid. He's got to control the fouls. But Selden played well at 5 for 9, 12 points, 0 turnovers, which is he's kind of had the turnover bug. But he had 4 assists, so pretty good game from him.
All right, one more little side shoot of this.
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, a lot of people have been talking about the bench in this game, and it shows that we have a pretty deep bench and a lot of good players. Who is the best bench player in this game against TCU?
Ooh. I'd probably give it to Landon Lucas this game. We haven't seen much of him, obviously, because Tarik Black's been kind of taking those minutes. Amari's obviously in the rotation. But he came in, had 7 points and 5 boards in 13 minutes. You know, Jamari had a pretty good game. He had 8 points, but he only had 1 rebound in those 14 minutes. Landon seems to really crash the boards. He plays pretty good defense. He's a little slower than the other guys, but he's active, and that's the one thing you got to see from him. When he gets in the game, he's got to give you energy, and it's good to see. What about you?
I think so, too. I was just gonna take an opportunity to talk up Landon Lucas. You know, he doesn't get all the minutes, but, you know, he's fundamentally sound from a post perspective. I don't think he's going to be making 15-foot jumpers like Perry can, or maybe even like Embiid can. But he's going to definitely rebound. He's going to box out. He made his free throws. It's a good to know that he's there.
Yeah, that's a nice insurance policy, too. I mean, you see a team like Oklahoma State lose Cobbins and just got nothing on the post. Well, we've got guys on our bench that would start for them right now. I mean, is Landon Lucas, would he start for Oklahoma State today?
I think so.
He probably would. I mean, that's a nice luxury.
You play a lot of minutes if you didn't.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a nice luxury to have. It's something that, you know, we haven't had in a long time to have that many guys in the rotation on the front line. Especially good for getting guys like Embiid better in practice too. Going against another 7-footer or close to it in practice, it's got to be nice. So let's talk about the WTF player of the game. So I think there's a few candidates here. Perry Ellis was 2 for 8 from the field for 8 points, missed a bunch of layups again, but the guy had 14 rebounds. Hard for him.
He was crashing the board.
Hard to give it to him.
He was all over the place.
Yeah.
Which we don't see that all that often, and maybe it's just more of circumstance, but you know, he was crashing the boards. You can't give it to him.
Not going to. That's why this was the ruling out Perry edition, even though he's 2 for 8 and missed a lot of layups. I think there's a couple other options here. Embiid had a pretty good stat line, 14-6, but the 5 fouls bugged me, so I put him in the section. But I think Tharp might be the one that jumps out the most. And I think, like you mentioned, this was a game of circumstance in a lot of ways, where, you know, Tharp obviously didn't have to come in and score points. He didn't have to come in and be a floor general in a, you know, a close, tight game. So I'm willing to give him a pass here, but 20 minutes, 0 points. 4 assists, 0 turnovers, so give him that. But I think he's the one that kind of jumps out to me. What about you?
I think so, but it's nothing to worry about.
No, I'm not worried at all.
I mean, if our point guard has 4 assists and no points and we win by 20,
yeah, who cares?
20-something, then okay. He didn't do anything to screw up, so that's nothing to worry about. Just something to, you know,
it's just
give us something to talk about in this little quick segment.
Well, and after we've seen from him, you know, score like 20 plus this last week and be like a national player of the week, you know, candidate or whatever. So just a different game, you know, but it shows that we don't necessarily need that every game from him. And that's nice luxury to have. So this was a pretty tight one, but let's hear your floor burns player of the game.
You cannot hope or wish good things to happen. You go make them happen because we are in attack mode for the entire 40 minutes. We do that, and we're going to have a fun locker room in about 2.5 hours.
I think there's a few candidates here. Jamari, who we mentioned off the bench, 14 minutes, 8 points. But I think Landon Lucas might be the guy for me, as mentioned before. What about you?
I'm going to say Jamari just because I want the opportunity to make this observation.
Okay,
so Jamari Traylor came from Chicago, played on the same AAU team as Anthony Davis. Okay. So I just got to thinking about all the players that Jamari, by the end of his college career, will have practiced against or played against. You know? So we start off with Anthony Davis in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, they played on that Mean Streets AAU team. They were, you know, pretty good. And then his freshman year, his redshirt year, he played against Jeff Withey and Thomas Robinson. So these are the people he's guarding against in practice.
Pretty good.
You know, and then the next year, you have Withey. And then this year, you have Embiid. You have Perry. And then next year, you'll have Cliff Alexander, you know, possibly other guys like Miles Turner, if Miles Turner decides to come, or Embiid, if he decides to stick around. So there's going to be a he may be the one guy who's played against all of these, you know, top,
seen it all.
In at least in terms of college skill, the best post players that anyone will have ever played against in practice. He'll have seen it. So, you know, I think you see him developing, you know, stealing moves from these types of guys, mm-hmm. you know, learning little tricks from these types of guys. Hopefully he'll get a chance to play it at the next level. And if he does, he's definitely not going to be, you know, surprised by anyone, because he's played against the best.
Agreed. Yeah, that's a good observation. I didn't even really think about that, but
and that has nothing to do with
nothing.
This specific game, but I just
seen
wanted
it all.
I just wanted to throw that out there. He did hustle. He had eight points in 14 minutes. You know, good production off.
He's had a really good year. You know, it seems to me when you looked at him in the preseason, you're like, you know, how many minutes is he going to see? And we kind of thought Tarik Black was going to be a little better maybe than he is. So we weren't sure how much Jamari would see the floor. Jamari's been awesome this year. He's played the exact role that he needs to play on this team. And hopefully, you know, he'll get his chance to play significant minutes at KU down the line. But he's really fun to watch. I'm very happy with his play this year.
So we've made this comparison before, and we made this comparison when he was a redshirt freshman, that he could end up being someone like Darnell Jackson. So mm-hmm. Darnell Jackson played like 20 as a senior. You know, he worked his way up to it. 24 minutes a game as a senior. Averaged like 10, 11 points, handful of rebounds, you know, 5 or 6 rebounds. I think that by the time he's a senior, depending on who's ahead of him and whether he gets the chance to start or not, he could definitely, you know, be comparable with a Darnell Jackson.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. He's a little shorter, but he's got that energy. He's got big body. He can rebound. And what I've been most impressed with, he's got pretty good shooting touch this year. He's making his free throws. He's got pretty good moves when he gets the ball in the, you know, high post. And so, yeah, it's been fun to watch him develop this year. And I think he's going to get better. So here's a new segment on the podcast. It's called the technical foul segment.
If it amazes you, then you don't know anything about basketball. You're illuminating your relative lack of knowledge of the game at a statement like that.
The only thing we talk about in this segment is whether KU got a technical foul in the last game. The answer is yes. That's it. That's the end of the segment.
We did. We got one.
Because that's becoming a thing. We get a technical foul in like, what, 7 of the last 8 games or something?
Wait, up stats. Okay, what happened? I forgot what happened.
It was a scrum. You know, it was Landon Lucas laying on the ground, and then Frank Mason came in.
Oh, it was
on
Mason. It was on Mason. Gave him a little shove.
Yep. Hey, you know what? I had no problem with it because, like I said, KU has won every game ever when there's a technical foul called in the game.
Okay, so I looked this up after you said that.
What? I told you not to look it up.
But, like, let me give you my take on this, okay? Okay. We figured out that this gives us some energy, and that, you know, it could be an important thing for us down the road. We've won games, too, where we haven't got technical fouls.
That's true.
So I think we should save them up so we're not, you know, outspending ourselves technical foul-wise. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So,
I don't know what you mean. I think I'd rather us get a technical foul every game because I think it's just more fun for me, and I think it fires up the team. As long as it's not in a situation where we're gonna lose the game because of it.
Okay, so in terms of value,
mm-hmm.
is it better for the player to get one, or is like if Bill Self gets one, it's like the nuclear bomb, like it's over?
Bill Self is probably
like
better.
It's like a finishing move and a.
But the problem with that is if Bill Self gets one, you're hoping it's because of a referee call and not because we need a momentum boost, which means we're losing or we're playing bad. So when a player gets one, it's usually because something has happened on the court and everyone's being tough guys and standing up for players or whatever. Scrum breaks out. So I don't know. It's tough because do you want to be down in the game and playing poorly and need Bill Self to get a technical? Or do you want your players to step in and not take any crap from anybody?
All right, I got one more thing to throw at you. Kevin, Okay. You like Game of Thrones, right?
I do.
You're into it. Like you're excited about it coming up.
I am.
Whole deal. Okay. So
I haven't read the books. but okay, I'm not that much into it.
You're familiar with Game of Thrones. Are you familiar with the concept of single combat?
No.
Have they got okay? So in single combat is where you avoid the entire war, and you decide the war based on you choosing a warrior and the other side choosing a warrior, and then they fight.
Oh,
whichever
okay,
side
sure.
wins, then that's the winner of the war. Okay, like so single combat, Game of Thrones. I'm sure there's some nerds out there who are, you know, just loving this part. Okay, so let's say that before a basketball game, you can choose one guy to fight somebody on the other team, and then whoever wins the fight, you know, wins the game. Who would on our team would we pick for our single combatant champion?
Like pound for pound, Frank Mason's probably up there. But if you're not going pound for pound,
We're doing single combat here.
You know, I think the popular answer would be, that's tough. I think I would probably take Jamari.
Okay.
From Chicago, Main Streets, as you mentioned. He's a big man. He's still pretty, he's got some quickness to him, so he can dodge, and he's pretty strong. I'll take Jamari. Who would you take?
I think I'm going with Embiid because really? he's got this reputation. He's, you know, quick,
the lion killer.
He's big. He's got this reputation as a lion killer that's going to be like huge intimidation for the other team.
Certainly.
I'm going with Embiid. Yeah.
I'll buy that. Okay, glad we talked about this. The great technical foul segment.
Yeah.
Coming
to
you next podcast.
Week.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
We will find out if it's a thing. Okay, so here's a new segment. I wanted to look back, Andrew, I don't know if you recall. Back on December 12th, this was following the Colorado and Florida games when everyone was freaking out. Remember that?
We weren't, but we kind of did our panic mode.
Right,
we allowed ourselves to get it out of our system.
We allowed ourselves 5 minutes to freak out about everything that was wrong with KU basketball. And in that 5 minutes, Andrew just did a lot of yelling, and I actually gave you a bunch of stats to back up how terrible we were. Maybe it was me yelling. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Here were those stats, and then I thought it'd be interesting to compare them to where we are now. So fast forward a month and a week, and here is where we are now. So back then, KU was 97th in team scoring in the NCAA. Now we are up to 32nd. So we've gone from 97th to 32nd just in this time frame. So obviously scoring some more points. At that time, KU was 31% from three-point line. Pretty terrible. Now up to 35.5. So made a pretty significant jump there.
And, you know, you need a significant jump just to move up 4 points.
Exactly.
It's not like we're shooting 35 now. We're shooting, you know, near around 40, which is crazy for a KU team.
Right. No, we'll take that every time. So 35.5. That moved us up from 267th in the NCAA to 129th. So we're back into the like a B minus range in the NCAA. Here's another one. This was probably driving Bill Self bonkers. KU was 100th in the NCAA in total rebounding, now up to 52nd. So made a significant leap there as well. And then obviously offensive rebounding was a big part of that. Now it's a kind of a skewed stat because we make a lot of shots, so there's not as many offensive rebounds to be had, but we were 263rd in the NCAA, now up to 165th. So we've jumped almost 100 spots in offensive rebounding just since December 12th. Here's another good one. Free throw percentage. We were 224th. We're up to 175th. So like that's, like you said, it's tough to make a big jump in things like this. So that's nice to see. Any other ones here jump out to you, Andrew?
Sure. The assist to turnover ratio has moved from 154th to 105th.
Mm-hmm.
We're averaging almost a full steal more per game.
Yeah.
And we were 100th in field goal percentage defense. We're now 56th. And, you know, if you just look at the KenPom stats, we're both in the top 25 in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency now.
That's huge.
And we still foul about the same, and we still turn the ball over a lot. So there's still a lot to be accomplished, but it just goes to show you, since we had that little panic mode, freak out mode session, we have improved significantly. And you know, with a young team like this, this is something that we've been saying since the beginning of the year, is that we should anticipate some struggles and then slowly getting better and better as time goes on. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
Agreed. One last stat. Actually, two more stats. Right now, KU is third in the NCAA in field goal percentage. It's kind of a crazy stat to think about. Like, Bill Self teams obviously always have pretty high field goal percentage because we take a lot of, like, you know, run through the bigs and whatever else. But that's really good. I mean, that I think is one thing that's going to keep us in a lot of games, because you got to think the defense is going to continue to get better, which we've seen it has. And if we're making shots and taking good shots, that's a good recipe for success. And then we're 13th in the nation in blocks per game at 6.3. I think that number is going to just continue to go up. What about you?
I think so too. I mean, especially the more minutes Embiid plays. If he plays 19 minutes and whatever, if he plays 30 minutes a game, you know, he averages over 60% from the field right now, and it's been getting a lot of blocks. So the more minutes he plays, the better those stats are going to be.
I agree. I remember at the beginning of the season, we thought that Andrew Wiggins was going to lead the team in blocks because he has that quick jump at the perimeter. We were wrong.
Well, we didn't realize that Embiid had some withy in him.
Yeah, he does.
We just said, oh, he's not going to be withy. We just threw that out there and said, nope, he's not withy.
He's not a rim protector.
Kevin, he's got some withy in him.
He's a different withy.
Oh, sure, he's different. But in a lot of respects. He's not different in the same sense of other teams are getting kind of scared, a little apprehensive to go into the paint. That's the only thing that's consistent.
And that's why I think our field goal percentage defense is going to continue to drop. And things like that, because, I mean, like you said, it's people are like, oh, crap, you get in the lane and Embiid's there.
And it was that we how many times did we say last season that we saw, you know, a small point guard drive into the lane and then just turn
around,
literally turn on a dime and head back out. And just, exactly. Nope, nah, I can't do that. Turning around. You've seen that a couple times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it was with Withy, but it's starting to get that way.
And you're seeing teams try to draw Embiid away from the paint a little bit, kind of like teams did with Withy. But Embiid's so dang fast that he can really recover. And that's the other thing, a little different than Withy. He's got some recoverability and things like that Withy didn't. But, man, it's fun to have a rim protector. Basketball at KU and having a rim protector on defense makes things so much better for everybody. And now that we sort of are kind of getting one, this team's getting a little scarier to play, even more scary than it was before. So, all right, what do you say we take a short break here and get Jeff Goodman in on the podcast? Give us just 1 second here. We're going to give him a call, and we will be right back.
Waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. I don't know, but today seems kinda odd. No barking from the dog, no small. And mama cooked the breakfast with no hog. I got my grub on, but didn't dig out.
All right, we are joined by Jeff Goodman, formerly of The Scout, Fox Sports, CBS, and most recently as your ESPN basketball insider. You can find him everywhere on ESPN right now. Writing, reporting, sit-down interviews, some studio stuff. How has the transition been, Jeff, to TV?
Man, you're making me feel bad already. Scout, Fox, CBS, ESPN. You know, my wife says I can't really stick with the decision. And although I don't think I'm going to leave ESPN anytime soon, so far it's been great.
Good.
You know, having a chance to cover a little bit of everything and do kind of different platforms and see if I'm not horrible on TV. That's kind of the first thing. And
uh-huh.
I didn't have high expectations, to be honest. So
I think you've been just fine. We've seen a lot of your work.
I've been okay. My motto is just try not to stink.
There you go.
So,
set,
you know,
the expectations low.
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, it really has been a blast of, you know, doing what I do, recruiting, doing some NBA stuff, obviously primarily college basketball and NBA draft. But they've given me kind of the go-ahead to, hey, listen, if you can, you know, you can get an NBA star and sit down with them. Or, you know, I sat down with Brad Stevens and did something for a Sunday night conversation. Just been, you know, different types of things. And, you know, to me, that's kind of the coolest thing is you can do radio, you can do TV, you can still do writing, you can cover recruiting, college, NBA. So it's hard to get bored doing very all cool. that.
I imagine that's true. So if you're unfamiliar with Jeff's work, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably aren't. But if you're unfamiliar, Jeff has been probably among, how do we say it, the most outspoken national media on Wiggins' shortcomings this year, much to the chagrin of a lot of KU fans on Twitter. First off, Jeff, how many KU fans have you blocked on Twitter? You can be honest.
Probably a few. Probably, okay. You know, I probably blocked a total. And now, honestly, I block people that just annoy me and fill up my timeline and over and over. Like that, that's honestly what it's come to now, which I feel horrible about. But I don't want to look at my timeline and see the same guy over and over saying the same things. You know, I got somebody slamming me about saying positive things about Aaron Kraft, and he does it like every day, five times a day. And I don't even know who he's a fan of. Might be a Kansas fan, might be a Kentucky. I have no idea, but it just finally it's like, you know what? Enough already. I don't have time to look at my timeline and see this one guy who just keeps hammering me for the fact that I'm saying that Aaron Kraft makes a pretty darn big impact on the game defensively. And can he shoot? Can he score? No, he cannot. And this is a bad team around Aaron Kraft. But anyway, I'm kind of getting away from the topic there. But
well, I'm glad you haven't blocked me yet.
Yeah, I probably blocked about 50 people total.
Okay. That's not
a lot
bad.
Of it is when people, you know, most of it is when people cross the line.
Fair enough. That's understandable. Well, I think you and I are actually come at Wiggins. And we end up in the same place, but maybe come from different places. I think it was because around here, a lot of people, including myself, thought that Wiggins was probably going to be a 16-6 guy because a 16-6 guy in Self's offense is awesome. I mean, that's really good. And then, you know, you kind of come at it more. Looking at some of his shortcomings, but yet he's still there at 16-6. So I just wanted to get your take on, I guess, this word expectations that is thrown around Wiggins so often. Coming into the season, what were your expectations, I guess, just generally of his game, not necessarily from the points perspective?
You know, it's funny because it's how he gets to 16-6. You know, that's, I think, the biggest thing is you can look at the numbers all you want and, you know, 16-6 is darn impressive for a freshman. We know that. Not a lot of guys do it in Self's offense, like you said. Not a lot of guys do it. Period. Anywhere. But you know, when I watched him, and I think a lot of people will hammer me for what I wrote after he destroyed Julius Randle at the PCM, and I did. I wrote, "Listen, this kid's the best player in America. He'll go number one." We all tend to get a little bit excited off one game. And I think we all did that with Julius Randle and Wiggins, no matter who it was that was in attendance, because we don't see Andrew Wiggins. I used to be a recruiting guy, and I would have seen back in the day Andrew Wiggins 100 times over the course of the summer. And that summer I probably saw him 10, 12, maybe 15 times is my guess overall. And, you know, you watch him, and he is tremendous in transition. And Tyler Ennis was pushing the ball, and we see how good Tyler Ennis right now is, the freshman from Syracuse. And when you get Wiggins in transition in the open court, he's unstoppable. And then he gets his confidence up. And the other thing was, in AAU ball, high school ball, he could get by guys with his handle,
right?
Whatever he wanted, for the most part. There were certain guys that obviously could really guard. For the most part, he had confidence that he could get by guys because he was just at a different level athletically. Now you're sensing, you're seeing the fact that he does not have the confidence to just break guys down in the half court. You know, he's got that kind of one dribble spin move or two dribble spin move that he can get to the basket, but he's not always exploding. You could see it even AAU ball. He would play the level of his competition at times and tend to drift, but it wasn't nearly as, to me, it wasn't nearly as much as in a college game because, again, he could dominate based on his athleticism. Now it's a different level. You don't have a court filled with a bunch of non-D1 players, which is what you had a lot of times, whether he was playing at Huntington Prep or for his team out of Canada. So, you know, the deficiencies that I saw were he was an average shooter. He didn't have a great handle. And most of all was the motor. And you saw it a little bit at the end of last summer. And then you talk to people, whether it was on the Kansas staff, whether it was NBA guys, and then me going down there in October and seeing it in person. And you started to concern yourself with the fact that, listen, he may not be that dominant player that people are talking about right now, because there are some deficiencies. And I'm not saying he's a terrible player by any means. I still have him on the board as the number three pick in America. How bad is that? That's still pretty darn good.
Right.
So, again, I just think a lot of people, and what I wrote prior to the season was people having him, if you remember, he was the clear-cut number one guy. Everybody said it. There was nobody else that was going to get in the equation. And my take was, settle down. This is not the clear-cut number one guy in America. In fact, I would not be surprised if he does not go number one overall. And right now, I think that's certainly the case, because I think you've got a three-man race right now for the number one spot, and two of them are in Lawrence, Kansas, and the other one's Jabari Parker at Duke.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you talk about, like, the numbers, I guess, the way he gets there. You know, it seemed like to me, and I think you'd agree, that he could get 20 and 8 any day he wants. Like, it's just, it's that type of thing that leaves you wanting more, that Bill Self talks about a lot, and I think you talk about a lot, is, you know, he can get to the foul line 10 times a game if he wants to. And yeah. And in that offense, and Bill Self's offense, you can do that. And I think it's just he's been a little timid to get there, and maybe it's deferring to other guys on the team. There's certainly a lot of mouths to feed, and it's a good KU team. I guess what I'm getting at is, if, you know, Wiggins had gone to Florida State, for instance, and he went and averaged 19 and 8 on that team, and, you know, took 15, 18 shots a game because he'd have to, do you think people would have the same reactions if, you know, he was playing more aggressive, really, because there was nobody else to do it?
Well, the problem is, too, Kansas is on TV every game.
Mm-hmm.
So we see every game. We break it down every game. Florida State, we'd see the numbers, but people would not be watching the games like they are now, breaking down his play, saying, well, why is he just standing there watching at times?
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't standing there watching against TCU in the first half. He was assertive for the most part. He was running the court hard. He was chasing balls. He was getting up in people, I thought, a lot more defensively. But I think it's just, you know, unfortunately, it's playing in Kansas.
Yeah.
And every game is magnified, every game, especially in the Big 12 this year, where, let's face it, there aren't too many TCUs.
Yeah, no, there's not.
There's only a few teams that are irrelevant in that league this year. And, you know, again, I think the expectations were unfortunate. I think that's one of the things that I tried to do in the preseason, was temper those expectations.
Yeah, and that was my goal, too.
Yeah, people looked at it as me knocking him. I'm not knocking the kid. The kid's a heck of a player. He's a great kid, not a good kid. He's a tremendous kid. You can see it. I mean, part of his problem is he's too nice a kid.
Yeah, and we've seen that a little bit here at KU, with guys like Xavier Henry and Macklemore last year.
Why I would like, you know, people got on me when I said, listen, I'd like to see Bill Self force feed him the ball against TCU in the second half and force him to go for like 40. And people are like, well, that never happens in Kansas. Why would you do that? Well, because I don't think any of his teammates would be upset.
No.
I think they'd actually be thrilled. If Andrew Wiggins went for 40, you don't think everybody in that locker room would be absolutely thrilled for the kid? And then maybe, again, it would just help his confidence of, hey, I can take over. I can dominate a game whenever I want to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think he's making strides at least – from what we've seen, maybe at the beginning of the season, a lot of his big point games, like for instance against Duke, he was just making threes and things like that. That's not his game, and I think you'd agree. Yeah. So I like to see that he's getting to the foul line. I think he is adjusting a little bit to college ball and looking a little better, the Oklahoma State game notwithstanding. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I got one final question with Wiggins. Do you think Bill Self has mismanaged him in any way?
Listen, I'm not one to question one of the game's greatest, and that's Bill Self. I think he's trying to figure out which buttons to push with Andrew Wiggins. Now, if I were Bill Self, and again, who am I to question a Hall of Famer? But I would run some stuff early to get him going early for easy buckets, run him off something. You know, whether it's screens that he can get an easy look, mid-range look, or explode to the basket, just to get his confidence going. Because I think if you have Andrew Wiggins engaged and really engaged, it's a totally different team. I mean, you need – Nadir Tharp is probably the key to this team. If you said there's one guy that's still the key, and I wrote that this morning. I wrote X-Factor guys and national contenders, and Nadir is the guy for me. But Andrew Wiggins still, if he's being the Andrew Wiggins that we all think he can be, Joel Embiid gives him something that nobody else has. You know, Wayne Selden's pretty good. I mean, I just think he takes it to a new level. So why not run some stuff for him early to really get him going?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, so let's shift to the KU team. You mentioned Bill Self, and we like to sometimes have national guys on the podcast to give us an impression from outside the Kansas bubble that we are surrounded in. So what is like the national perception of this KU team right now? And about the job that Bill Self has done.
You know, I love what he did with the schedule. I know a lot of people kind of crucified him and people were scared, when they had that four losses earlier than people expected, especially the San Diego State one at home, which they're a better team than San Diego State. But, you know, I think part of it is, again, you've got so many young guys. You know, you look around and every guy is young in a way, you know, whether it's Wiggins, Embiid, and Selden being freshmen, and Embiid obviously only playing his third year organized basketball, or Nadir Tharp, who's never been a starter at this level, really. You know, he was a little bit last year because Elijah Johnson wasn't good enough, but, you know, for the most part, he's new to his position. There's no leader.
Right.
There's no clear-cut leader on this team coming in. Perry Ellis is as quiet as anybody. Wiggins is quiet. Embiid can't be a leader. Selden's trying to find his way. Nadir is just worried about himself right now and, you know, going into the season and can I keep this job? But he's trying to be a leader the best way he can. So it's a tough deal early. And I think, honestly, the worst thing that could have happened to this team might have been beating Duke in the second game of the year in Chicago because people built them up. Oh, my goodness. If Kansas can beat Duke with this team against that Duke team, which has got more experience overall, they're going to cut down the nets. I mean,
yeah,
nobody
– said it.
They may run the table. I mean, that's what people were thinking. It was obviously crazy. But I think they got humbled. And I think, again, the non-conference schedule is really going to help them, plus the Big 12 schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a team with no days off. Even the mid-majors they played, Iona, Towson, you know, good UTEP's not a great team, but they got a heck of a coach in Tim Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Toledo. I mean, like, they did not take days off at all in the schedule. So I think they're going to be more prepared than any team in America come March. Not even close.
As a follow-up to that, is it fair to give Wiggins a little bit of a pass playing the hardest schedule?
No question. Okay. Listen, no, have I been tough on him? I guess. I mean, I think I've just been the one person that's been kind of honest.
Yeah.
Prior to and throughout the season. And, again, you said it earlier. He leaves you wanting more a lot of nights.
Yep.
And that's a good thing because he's so darn talented that you just want to see that fire in him.
You know
want to see that assertiveness where he just knows he can get by a guy and he explodes the basket and dunks on him.
Yeah, I hear you. Let's shift to Embiid because this is really a kind of an interesting story. Can you remember a player in the college game, just talking about college, that any way compares to him as a comp, just the way he plays or looks out there on the court? Because we can't. We can't come up with anybody.
Oh, boy.
It's just
not really because he's so skilled as a seven-footer. People don't understand that, you know, like when I saw him in the preseason, and he's only taken 4 3-pointers all year, but when I saw him in the workout in the preseason, the practice – he's standing out there draining threes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a kid that, like, has some Anthony Davis in him in that regard, and here's why. He's not the shot blocker Anthony Davis is, but he can – Anthony Davis accepted his role through the first three quarters of the season. And if you remember, rarely – he just kind of did his thing and didn't put up numbers and was happy going in the post, catching lobs.
Mm-hmm.
Embiid's more skilled on the offensive end in the paint. Joel can step out and do some things too, but I think he's got the same approach as Anthony Davis, which is, hey, listen, you know what? I'm okay with this. I'm okay with my role. I'm not worried about being the number one pick, number two pick, number three pick, whatever he's going to be. I'm just trying to learn. And Davis was the same way. And I love the fact that they're just really good team guys. And so is Wiggins. So is Seldon. That's what bodes really well for this group, is I do think none of them are, you know, all about themselves. If they were, they'd be chucking 15, 20 shots a game. And nobody's done that. In fact, it's kind of the opposite, where you want them to shoot more, all of them.
No, I hear you. I agree with you. We've been pushing the same thing here. You know, you hear a lot of times people say you got to have stellar point guard play to win a championship.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a question. Does KU have enough surrounding Tharp to maybe overcome that stigma a little bit, or is Tharp good enough to maybe get there? What are your thoughts there?
First, let me say I've known Nadir for about 5 or 6 years, and, mm-hmm. and you will not find a better kid like I've ever met than Nadir Tharp. Now, have I questioned whether Nadir Tharp could be the point guard, starting point guard at Kansas to lead him to the Final Four national title? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I have. I mean, I think even this year shows it. At times, he looks phenomenal. And then there's other times when, obviously, he hasn't looked so good, and Bill Self had to yank him from the starting lineup. But, you know, against, you know, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, he scored the heck out of the basketball. Against Kansas State, he wasn't scoring, but all he did was distribute. Yeah. And I think, you know, he's got to figure out, again, like I said before, he's got to find his way and figure out, does this team need me to score tonight? Does this team need me just to distribute? I think it starts with distributing for him. He's got to start that way, with that mindset of, hey, listen, I'm going to get everybody else the ball. And if they sag off me and they double Joel off my man, then I got to make the shot. And he's going to have opportunities to do that. Let's face it. I mean, every time Joel gets the ball down there and he puts it on the floor, somebody else is coming.
Mm-hmm.
So there's somebody open. So if they pass the ball well, they're going to get uncontested perimeter shots. And they're not the greatest shooting team, but Nadir, trust me, he can shoot the basketball.
No, we agree. It's good to see also, you know, talk about Embiid passing out of the double, like against San Diego State, man, that was not happening. It was a mess. And yeah. I think, you know, like you mentioned, having that in the non-con prepares KU a lot more for, I mean, we're seeing it all the time now, and now he's just, it's like nothing. He's just passing out of it like it's like no one's there. So it's good
he's
to see that.
He's been consistent with that. You know, he has. I mean, people talk about how great feel he has, and you can see it's come quickly, but there are plenty of times early when he made the wrong decision passing, and who can blame him? I mean, again, he's learning right mm-hmm. now.
Well, let's transition to the Big 12, because it's another kind of a big surprise this year. It's been an interesting start to the season, seeing teams like Baylor and Iowa State, who we thought might be up toward the top, struggling a little bit out of the gate. And then, you know, like Oklahoma and Texas, really surprising. Who do you think right now, today, has the best chance to give KU the most trouble in the league race?
I'd probably still say Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
I got a funny story for you, though.
Yeah.
So last year, we're at the Final Four, and we're sitting there at the hotel. And Rob Carollo, the Big 12, he's the public relations guy for the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
He comes down, and we're working on our preseason top 25s for this year. And it was, you know, you have to do it because you got it. The day the national title is over, the next morning you put out your preseason, early preseason.
Right.
Top 25. And at that point, I have one Big 12 team in there. And I'm having fun with Rob Carollo saying how bad the league's going to be this year. And I'm like, who else can you possibly put in but Kansas? I mean, at that point, Marcus Smart wasn't coming back.
Right.
Kansas State, you know, could anybody name a player on Kansas State?
No, they all left.
Right. Texas, you know, again, Texas was coming off the, you know, mediocre year last year, and it's not like they were –
And everybody, you know, everybody left
Mike
them, too.
Bongo was gone. You know, Oklahoma's Oklahoma. You know, Iowa State, we didn't know they'd get DeAndre Kane and would be at this level. So it Baylor was down. You know, they didn't have a point guard in our eyes. So it was a one. I mean, honestly, I was saying they were the only team that you could legitimately rank, and now the Big 12 is the best league in America. Probably.
Yeah. It's been crazy. I mean, like you said, there's really no days off. And that game at Texas, which KU has upcoming this week, will be an interesting one, I think, more and more.
Yeah.
They got some length that could bug KU down in the post. It'll be interesting. But I agree with you. I think Oklahoma State is the second team right now that might scare me the most. Kansas, like as a state, is kind of interesting to be in right now with K-State, KU, and Wichita State all being stories. Here's an interesting question someone submitted to me. If there's a round robin, neutral site games between those three, what would the records be?
Kansas would be, you mean just home and home?
No, I mean, let's just say they played them in Anchorage.
They played in Anchorage, yeah. And they played, Kansas would be 2-0. I think K-State would be 0-2, and Wichita would be 1-1.
Okay. I was just curious. You know, I hear a lot of people around here talking about it.
I like Wichita. I mean, I do. I kind of go back to the fact of they're kind of the opposite of Kansas in their schedule. And, you know, their only legitimate win is at St. Louis hasn't beaten anybody. So I'm just still not sold. I like their talent. Like, looking at them, when you watch them, you're like, wow, I love Ron Baker. Clay Anthony's gotten better lately. Mm-hmm. Fred VanVleet's done a terrific job. But again, like, who have they played?
Right.
That you say to yourself, well, they deserve to be a number one or a two seed. I'm not buying it. I still got them as a three seed, only because, and maybe not to their own fault, they just haven't played anybody that you say to yourself, wow, okay, they've beaten the top 10 or 15 team. They deserve to be a two seed.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let's get out of here on a couple of quick hitters. So who is your final four right now, if you had to choose today?
Oh, boy, I go Arizona for sure, Kansas for sure. What else would I put in there right now? Michigan State for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Those three, I still think Michigan State, if they get healthy, they're my front runner to win it all. So Michigan State, Arizona, Kansas. How about we go Florida for the fourth?
I like those four. I agree. Here's one. Let's do a couple of Twitter questions as we get out of here. This is from @GarrettNeese. You watch much Marcus Smart, and what are your thoughts on his flopping?
You know, listen, I love Marcus Smart because I think he plays hard. I think for the most part, he plays the right way. He's a team guy who gets his teammates to play hard as well. You know, flopping's part of the game. It's become part of the game. You watch the NBA, what do? They flop. Now, they get fined for it now.
Yeah.
College players aren't getting fined for it. So, but where did Marcus Smart learn how to flop? Watching the NBA.
Yeah, fair enough. This is from @ColoringKU. Is this podcast going to have a paywall?
That's good. He must be a Gary Parrish fan.
I thought that was pretty good, too. And this is from @Jayhawk_Kevin. Can you unblock me? So
yeah, that was, I think he was one of the annoying guys.
He was one of the annoying guys. There you go. All right.
Like, well, I will unblock him, but I had had enough of him filling up my timeline.
Well, now he knows.
Like, it was nothing else. He didn't say anything that was over the line or anything. He just became annoying.
One tweet and you're done. Maybe two. You get away with two and then,
no, you're fine. You can listen. And if you're very, to me, if you're creative in how you make fun of me, I'm great with that.
That's good. All right, here's a couple more as we get out of here. What is your dream matchup of two teams you'd love to see this year in the tournament that aren't going to play otherwise?
Probably Arizona, Kansas.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, the bigs. Think about the matchups there. You know, Caleb Tarzewski against Joel Embiid, Aaron Gordon, Perry Ellis, and you know, you'd have Wiggins and whoever, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who would come off the bench, or Brandon Ashley, Nadir, TJ McConnell, Nick Johnson, Wayne Selden. I mean, man, that's the game. Honestly, if you want to give me a national title game, I'll take that one any day of the week. But again, I still like Michigan State to win it all.
We would take that as well. Well, hey, man, we really appreciate you coming on. We can find you, of course, @GoodmanESPN and all over ESPN. Is there anything you're working on right now you want to let people know about?
What am I doing? I got Cincy at Louisville on Thursday. Should be a good matchup. So if people want to make fun of me there and, you know, my TV skills, they're certainly, you know, can do it easily there and break down my TV game like I break down Andrew Wiggins' game.
Go.
I'm good with that.
There you go.
And other than that, I got a good trip. Actually, I'm going to see the Jayhawks next week or in about a week and a half at Baylor. I got a 3-game trip of Iowa State at Oklahoma State on Monday.
That'll be a good one.
Baylor, Kansas at Baylor Tuesday, and then I'm going to fly to Tucson and catch Oregon and Arizona on Thursday. So that's a great,
nice. Yeah, really good trip. Fun. Right on. Well, hey, we really appreciate it, man. We will certainly watch your work on ESPN. Everybody give you a follow at Goodman ESPN. And hopefully after this podcast, people will give you a little bit of a break on your Wiggins talk.
Yeah, I just want to be able to go to Kansas, Lawrence, and check in under my own name and not an assumed name. It's a hotel. That's all.
I think you'll be safe. We're pretty nice around here, just not on Twitter.
All right. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Kevin.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Take care.
Well, thanks again to Jeff Goodman for joining us. Very cool of him to come on and spend that long with us. We really appreciate that. What do you say we take a look around the Big 12? Because, as Jeff mentioned, there are no days off in the Big 12.
Y'all ready for this? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
How about playing a little defense? You ever heard of that one, Stan?
Dollar signs. All right, let's take a look around the Big 12. Start out with some standings. Atop the standings, KU 6-0. We've got OU and Texas a game and a half back at 5-2 each. Let's just stop right there. OU and Texas are second in the Big 12 at 5-2. Can you believe we're saying that right now at this time of the year?
They weren't considered the Big Four, you know.
No.
Well, not really. I mean, right. You have Oklahoma State, who's 4-2. I mean, they're just
right.
Half a game behind because of the scheduling. And then Iowa State and Baylor further along. You know, Iowa State's 3-3. Finally got a victory against K-State this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then Baylor, I thought I need to quit talking about Baylor.
You do.
And I thought they were going to get a win against Texas at home. And they didn't. They now fall to 1-5. In the Big 12, which is, for a team like that, for a team as talented as that, it's just crazy. Hard to even think about.
Like I said, I've made a point in my life just never to worry about Baylor in basketball. And it seems to work just about every time. Man, I'm watching this golf tournament. Gary Woodland is having a meltdown. Our KU golfer, Gary Woodland, not looking good to win his third tournament. That's a bummer. You know, we're equal opportunity here. We can talk about KU golf, can't we?
Sure, why not?
Okay. Well, anyway,
it's poor Gary, though.
Not looking good. He's having a little.
You know,
little
yesterday
here
he was rocking the big Jayhawk on his shirt.
Uh huh. Yeah, that was nice.
It looked good. Maybe that's good. Why he was doing well.
That's probably it.
He's not wearing it in this game. He's got it on his bag, but not on his shirt.
He just had a double bogey. He's not looking good. Okay, so let's get back to the Big 12.
I do this every week, but Kevin, I'm going to go through with you. You're going to give me your power rankings. So we're going to start off with number one. Obviously, I think you're going to pick KU.
Yep.
At 6-0, but where do you go from here?
This is interesting. So the way that I do my power rankings is still who I think is the best team at this point, and you know still has the best chance to win the Big 12. So I am taking KU, as you mentioned, and then I'm going Oklahoma State second and Iowa State third. And I think a lot of people are still surprised about that. But I still think that those three teams are the best three teams in the Big 12. Iowa State still scares me a little bit because of the home court advantage. But anyway, so that's my three. And then I think it's really close. OU and Texas, I think I'll take OU just slightly above Texas. But it's getting harder and harder not to rank them in the top four. And then I think, you know, we're looking at K-State or Baylor. I think I'm going to put K-State above Baylor at this point. You almost have to. So I'll take K-State, then Baylor, then West Virginia, Tech, and TCU. What about you?
So K-State falls all the way down to 6 for you.
Yeah, because you got to, I mean, who would you put? Would you put OU and Texas behind K-State right now?
I don't know, because Texas beat K-State in Austin.
Yep. A last second shot.
K-State has a win against Oklahoma State, though.
They do.
It's a lot to be played out. I think that's the point here. So we got a couple games coming up this week.
Would you put K-State behind them or ahead of them? That's what I want to know.
Ahead of Texas?
And Oklahoma.
Oof. I don't think so.
I wouldn't either.
I think they're in the right spot, but I think that they're still in good shape to make the tournament.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe that's not even the right. I mean, I don't think Baylor's in a good spot to make the tournament.
How many teams are we going to have in the tournament?
Depends on Baylor. I think we get 7 if Baylor turns it around. If not, 6 is realistic.
Yeah, Baylor still has a decent resume. I think their Kentucky win will look better toward the end. So, anyway, it'll be interesting to see. Let's get into some predictions for this week because we have some good games. Tomorrow, maybe the most interesting game of the week, Oklahoma State.
Yeah, and many of you will probably be listening to this by the time that game is already done.
Maybe. Oh, yeah, but, that's so, true.
Oklahoma State at OU.
Yeah.
Bedlam.
Who you got?
I'm going to go with OU.
Ooh.
Just, I think home court matters a lot in the Big 12. And I think that if there's any time where it's a close game between two, you know, pretty good teams, I think I'm going to always go with the home team.
I'm going to take Oklahoma State. And I think you and I will have a bet on this game. I want to push come to show.
Yeah, fine. Okay, next one, West Virginia at Baylor. Will Baylor finally end this awful skid?
They have to. Unless they check out, which is very possible.
West Virginia played really well against Oklahoma this weekend.
West Virginia's 3-4. I mean, they win this. They're back to 4-4. It's a good road victory for them. Next, you know, who knows?
Okay, next one, Texas Tech at K-State.
K-State.
Okay, that's easy enough. Wednesday, Iowa State at KU. Let's hold off on that one until the end. Okay, here's a barn burner.
Mm-hmm.
This is a matchup that everybody's looking forward to. TCU at Texas Tech.
You know, Texas Tech is actually playing pretty well. I don't know if you've been paying any attention to them. I don't think there's really much reason to, but I kind of like what they're doing down there. I'm going to take Tech here, and I don't think it's going to be very close.
Okay, then we have K-State going to West Virginia. They've already played once this season, but now the Wildcats will be going into Morgantown for Huggy Bowl Part 2.
I got West Virginia.
Oof.
Yeah.
I think K-State wins.
We might have another bet on our hands.
Okay, and this is going against my home court deal, but
uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a reason. I think K-State wins. Okay, then we have later on Baylor at Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State.
OU at Iowa State.
This is a good one, but I'm going to take Iowa State.
And then we have KU at Texas, which we definitely will be talking about a little bit later on, but let's move on to more important power rankings.
Okay.
We just did our Big 12 power rankings, and this is a segment that we skipped last week. Somehow we forgot about it because this is one of our favorite topics to talk about.
Right.
We talk actually this conversation comes up between you and I and a handful of other people
weekly.
Twice a month? Yeah. In our normal everyday conversation?
Yeah, at least.
And at least this is what we're talking about, and I'm sure you all have had this conversation too. But our favorite halftime shows in sports, and whether that be, and we've got the Super Bowl coming up next week, so it's important to talk about, you know, halftime shows because that's all anybody cares about with the Super Bowl. People could care less about Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson. Let's talk about halftime shows. And the reason why we bring this up is because last Monday, the Baylor game, Kevin and I bore witness to what was probably the greatest halftime show I've ever seen.
Might be. Yeah, it probably is.
Do you agree with that? And that, of course, is the, I don't even know if it had a name, but I'll just call it dogs doing backflips. It was a bunch of dogs who did backflips. They rode scooters. They did these little jump rope routines.
Mm-hmm.
It was adorable and impressive. Someone made the comment that you couldn't, so, and then they all stood on these pedestals while they weren't doing their tricks. There's probably five or six dogs. You couldn't get seven-year-olds trained well enough to do what those dogs were doing. To stand still on a pedestal like that, and then it was their turn to come out and do a backflip and then do jump rope action. So you couldn't, like, that's how impressive this was. And I was trying to figure out, like, how do you train dogs like that? It's not like you can, you know, pull up a YouTube video that says how to train your dog, how to do a backflip or jump rope. Like, okay, Fluffy, come up here. Watch this YouTube video. Do this. You know, that's how humans train themselves.
Right. Yeah, I do most of my training via YouTube.
Right. You can't do that with a dog. How do you train a dog to do a backflip?
I don't know, but maybe
or,
they need...
Or successive backflips.
Maybe the bigger question is, maybe there needs to be a YouTube for dogs.
YouTube for dogs. I think we just made $1 million.
I think we just did too.
I think we just call it YouTube for dogs.
That's it. Yeah. No fancy names. You don't have to come up with anything.
Okay. So with that in mind, we just saw what was possibly the greatest halftime show ever. I'm going to run through a couple of these other ones and then I'm going to have you power rank these. in your favorite order.
You got
it. We've done that. What maybe used to hold the title also involved dogs, and that was the Frisbee Dogs.
Frisbee Dogs.
Where the dogs would catch Frisbees running across the court.
Oh.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Then there's the Red Panda.
Nah.
Also known as the Chinese Bull Lady, who puts bulls on her leg, and she's on a unicycle, and then somehow flicks them onto her head. Is that a good description of that?
Yeah, I can't get into Red Panda, but everyone seems to love it.
Okay, and then you have the Quick Change Magicians. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
It's where they are wearing a bunch of clothes, and then they suddenly change into new clothes in this tube. That's a poor description, but they're magicians, and they change their clothes really, really fast.
Yeah.
Okay, we talked about the dog trick guys. At the Oklahoma State game, there was a guy who was a painter guy who played some Metallica music and then suddenly started painting something. And then it's obvious that it's going to be the Jayhawk. But then he has the colors inverted.
I don't think I remember this one.
Well, you weren't there for this game. And he does, and he had the red on the bottom and the blue on top. It's like, oh, everyone's like, oh, he's doing it wrong. He made the head of the Jayhawk blue and the bottom red.
Oops.
But it turns out he's painting it upside down.
Ah, yeah.
And he flips it and it's a Jayhawk. It's like, oh, it's amazing.
The whole crowd goes nuts.
It was fine. Then you have the jump rope guys.
Yeah.
They were okay.
Not great.
The ball spinning guy, the guy who spins like 20 balls on his body.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then, of course, tried and true classic, Marching Cobras.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a Marching Cobra fan?
I'm not, but I'll add another one to it. Like the guys that come with trampoline dunks. What about those guys?
Those guys are good. So give me a top three at least. Or give me, maybe I'm assuming your dog backflips is number one now. Give me a couple more in order of your favorites.
Frisbee Dogs, number two.
Okay, so we've got two dog ones. If you want to be a successful halftime show, you got to put dogs in it.
It's like 1A and 1B for me on those two. And then I think it's tough. Everyone goes nuts for Red Panda, but I just can't get on board. And it's something carny about it that just, I'm not into it. So I'm going to go with the dunk guys because I like seeing people do dunks. Like, I'm really big into dunks. So, like, trampoline dunks, that's cool too.
Okay.
And they do, like, flips and, you know, cartwheels and such. The Cobras are okay. I'm sort of into that, but I think those are my three. What about you?
I definitely like the Cobras. And just something about it, it's just chaos. You know, you have all these guys coming out playing, doing their drum corps deal, doing their backflips, and it looks so disorganized, but it's not. It's just people out there going crazy. There's a guy in a snake head. It's just, if you just don't think about it, it's the most amazing thing ever. So. Yeah. I think I put them probably three behind dog backflips, Frisbee Dogs. Then I go the Cobras.
Okay. All right.
But I think those are my top three. But KU's done a pretty good job of bringing in some high-quality halftime entertainment. Okay, here's my last question on this subject.
Okay.
I didn't preempt you with this or give you this question, but you're going to have to come up with it off the top of your head. If KU Athletics came to you and offered you $1 million to do a halftime show, anything you wanted, what would you do? What would your show be?
Oh, like me personally?
Yeah. You can put together anything you want. Like, what skill are you exhibiting to the crowd, or what are you doing that's entertaining the crowd?
I'd probably just like go get an act and then keep the
rest.
No.
You have to be involved in this.
I have to be involved?
Yeah.
Then I'd probably do a duet with Drake.
Oh.
It's like me and Drake up there. Because I like to think that I have the silky smooth tones as Drake does. With a little auto-tune. Kind of like he uses.
I like it.
I think he and I could put together a pretty good show. I don't know. I think the girls would probably be more into him, though. But that's okay.
It's just, you know, it's attraction by association.
Right, exactly. There might be one out there.
All right.
Oh, well. Hey, what about you? All right, you ask me. You got to come up with one.
I think I would mix Marching Cobras with the Backflip Dogs.
I like that.
Like, mix them into one gigantic, you know, series of backflip drum corps guys with snake heads. I would be the second snake head. I would spend part of the $1 million to be the second Snakehead guy.
Good thinking.
Directing the drum corps backflip dogs.
I like it. All right. Well, hopefully, KU Athletics obviously listens to this podcast. Maybe they'll come up and approach one of us on one of these ideas. So we shall see. Let's preview Iowa State real quick before we get out of here. Iowa State is coming off a victory over K-State, 81-75 at home. A much needed one because they were on a skid of three straight losses. Now 3-3 in the Big 12. And they are in the middle of a pretty tough stretch here. Of course, you can almost say that about anybody in the Big 12 right now, that they're in the middle of a tough stretch because everybody's so good right now. But they played K-State, and then their next three games are KU, OU, and OSU. So they're in trouble again here, Andrew, if they somehow, you know, lose the next three games, which they very well could. Or I'm certain that they will be underdogs in two of the three. I think OU is at home for them, but they could very well be 4-6 or 4-5 or 4-6, I guess, to end this stretch and maybe back out of the conversation. So this is a big stretch for them. They could really use a victory against KU. Edgeem is still killing it. He's averaging like 18 and 7 a game. DeAndre Kane is still really good, 16 and 6 assists. So it's an interesting team. I still believe in them a little bit, even though some people have maybe backed away from that. What about you?
I think so, too. And especially, you know, we won by 8. And we had that game under control. But you just can't expect Iowa State to go so cold from 3 two times in a row against you.
Yeah.
You know, they only hit 4 threes or against us, and they shot, it was 25.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't expect that to happen. So you got to think they're going to make up a little ground. The thing I do like about this is that at Allen Fieldhouse, it's not at Hilton Coliseum. If you remember last year, it took a bank three from Ben McLemore to even take them to overtime. So they're going to come ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like this. So we've got a better interior against them. You know, in the past, they struggled against us because they weren't getting any rebounds, and they had basically no attempt to get offensive rebounds. So I think that if we control the paint, we'll still win.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think the Big 12 is catching up to what this Iowa State team is. They're really good at home, obviously. They got a lot of energy at home. But overall, they're kind of like one of those like middle-aged YMCA teams that just is really, they don't screw up much, and they take every ounce of athleticism they have, and they take it to 100%. And they're really efficient. Like, they take good shots, and they exploit matchups, and that's a lot of that's on coaching, so you kind of have to tip your hat to the mayor there. But when they're hitting their threes, they're a different team, and when they're not, they lose. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to, especially against KU, because they're not going to have as many advantages one-on-one that they have against other teams in the Big 12. So they're gonna have to make threes. They got that freshman Thomas, the little white kid, who made 4 threes against K-State. I would look to him as a player to watch out for, because usually little white guys make a lot of threes against KU. So that's my my theory there. So watch out for Thomas, but it should be a good game. I do think that KU will win. What do you think the line will be on that game?
Oh, that's a good question. You're better at this than me, but I'd probably say KU -6.
Yeah, I was going to say 6.5. So I think that's about right. And then it might get bet to 5.5. Like, I bet people will come in on Iowa State for some reason. But I don't know. Maybe not. KU's getting a lot of love in Vegas now. We are now the favorite to win it all, surprisingly. 4-1 odds if you bet KU right now. 100 to win 400 to win the national championship. So go out there to Vegas and maybe make a little bet. Probably not great odds right now on KU, but hopefully a winning bet. Let's talk about Johnny's gift card giveaway. So we just gave away a $30 gift card on the previous podcast to someone named Josh, who came up with a really good idea for a technical foul for Embiid to do when he runs out of technical foul ideas. So we got to come up with something on this for this week. Do we want to?
Well, how about we just do what they would do for a halftime entertainment show?
Oh, there you go.
What the not
you get $1 million.
And you could, well, I'm just saying that I did the $1 million thing, so you wouldn't say, I wouldn't want to go up in front of people. Like, I got to give you some incentive to go up there.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, you have to go up there. You can combine it with something that has been done before, or you can come up with your own act. Like KU doing a, or KU, Kevin doing a duet with Drake. You know, mm-hmm. come up with your own thing, and the more creative you get, and the better, basically, if I would want to see it, then you'll probably win.
All right.
So this is, you know, $30 in Johnny's cash. Tweet to at Jayhawk Talk, and I am at Sherlock Hoops. Give me your idea for what you would do for halftime entertainment at a KU game. You get about 6-7 minutes. You know, halftimes are 15. They're usually out of there by, you know, 7-6 minute in the halftime. A couple minutes to set up. So take that in mind too. And then we'll share the best ones with the athletic department, and maybe you'll get an opportunity to do this.
Very good.
Probably not, but
I will copy Marcioni, assistant athletics director, on every single one that is sent to us. I'll retweet and CC Marcioni just for that. So come up with some good ones, and like you said, maybe Marcioni will help make it a reality. All right, Andrew, we have now crossed the 1 hour, 15 minute mark, so I think it's time to get out of here. Many thanks again to Jeff Goodman for joining us. We really appreciate him spending some time. You can follow him at GoodmanESPN. And if you're going to make fun of him, just do it creatively, and maybe he'll laugh and continue to interact with you. Or you can flow his timeline and get blocked, you know, whatever you want to do. So there you go. Now you know. We also encourage you guys to go on to iTunes, click a little bit on there, give us a rating and a comment, or subscribe. It really helps us to get the podcast out to the earthlings of this world. And you can also follow us at Jayhawk Talk and at Sherlock Hoops. We truly appreciate all of the interaction on Twitter, on Facebook, and on iTunes and everything else. It blows us away how many people listen to the show and interact. We really appreciate it. Thanks again to Johnny's Taverns. We will catch you next time, probably later this week. And rock chop. But I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. 9 times get to cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court, so we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together, but win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man, but one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck J Hawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck J Hawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks.